few good minutes now with Marcus Pollard, and there's so many different ways to describe him. Former tight end, amazing race participant. Right now, though, you're the guy that gets these players from college to the pros, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, and it's been a great title for me. You mentioned a few, being a pro football player and being on the Amazing Race, but I think the role that I'm in right now is probably the most productive for me because I get an opportunity to help these young guys transition from being really college, good college players to become professional and the epitome of being a professional.
How about Marcus Pollard, adventurer, right, from Alabama to liberal Kansas, which is a completely different world, to Bradley playing basketball, to the NFL playing tight end, to playing with Peyton Manning, to the Amazing Race, to Jacksonville. I mean, your life has been an adventure. You got a great story to tell.
Yeah, absolutely. I was commenting in the paper, and I think it was out yesterday or today, that my life is a lot like Forrest Gump. Like, it's adventure after an adventure having an adventure. I'm meeting these great, amazing people. You just mentioned Peyton. Played with Tom Brady, being here with Gus and you guys, and being from a small town in Alabama, where it was really in Alabama. And so a lot of things that, you know, Forrest went through to get to where he you know, became Forrest Gump. I feel like my life is just one big adventure, and I don't know where the story's going to end. But right now, I'm really excited about the chapters that I'm writing right now.
Yeah, just enjoy the ride.
Absolutely.
Right? So the NFL is going through this culture shift, and a lot of it comes out of the locker room in Miami last year. People remember, you know, the situation with Richie Incognito. First of all, you've been in a lot of locker rooms. You were in the Colts. You were in the Lions. You were in the Seahawks. You were in the Patriots. You were in the Falcons, now in Jacksonville. So you know a lot about this. First of all, can NFL locker rooms change? And second of all, what does it take to get that done?
Brian, I think you're absolutely right. You're on to something. Can an NFL locker room change? I think so. I think with the right person in charge, you can definitely change the culture. I think the person that we have in charge, and Gus Bradley, he is creating an atmosphere where anybody and everybody can be productive, whether you are out of a person that has some drug issues, or you're a person with some alcohol issues, or some person, you know, who may not have the same sexual preferences.
Yeah, if you're Michael Sam all of a sudden.
Absolutely.
Trying to fit in.
And you can fit in this place. I mean, he's made the culture conducive for everyone to be productive. And that's the one thing that he preaches to us. Just be good at, you be good at what you do, and we trust that the results will come.
You know, I was just standing down there, and there was a player who had cramps. And they carried him out, and they were giving him the grief. You know, they called him LeBron, right? But when he came back in, everyone said, are you okay? Are you all right? Thought we lost you. Are you okay? It was interesting to see how there you can still kind of have that abrasive nature that makes a locker room unique, but at the same time, you got a caring group of guys that want to make sure you're okay.
Absolutely, and that's the one thing that Gus and Dave's really done, a really good job of bringing in people who are high-character guys. Maya Angelou said it best. He said, people don't want to know what you know, but they want to know that you care about them. And when they know that you care and they buy in, and to me that's an amazing thing. When people know that they don't care about what you know, who you know, they want to know that you care. And I think Gus does a great job of showing the guys that he cares. And it permeates down to our subculture, the guys that are in the locker room, the Puzzes, the Mercedes Lewis's, the Sendarik Marks. Those guys really keep that locker room saying, hey, we're all in this thing together.
So when the NFL rolls in here with their traveling road show to talk about that, they pretty much see what they want their end result to be, or at least it sounds like that.
Absolutely. I think this is a model organization where we're definitely heading that direction, where the NFL is going to come in here with all their, you know, thing. This is what we want to do. This is music we want to play. We want to discuss the N-word and all these different things. And I think Gus has already done a great job of getting that ball rolling in the right direction where the NFL wants to see the end result. So I think right now we are that test team that says, okay, this is how it should be done. I think our culture is conducive for anybody to, like I said earlier, for anyone to be successful.
Can we get rid of the N-word?
I think it's going to be tough, but at the same time, I think it's that culture that we all should make a point to just say, hey, let's get rid of this word.
Because I've heard it in the locker room for years and years and years, and I've seen the look on guys' eyes when they say it, and there's no malice there.
Yeah.
But as a black man yourself, you know, I'm interested in your perspective. Should we get rid of it?
I think so. I think it's a word that has a lot of negative connotation. But at the same time, you know, Ron Millington did a great speech to our guys about the N-word and the power of words. And when you had so long where the N-word was so cool and cliche, like, oh, what's up, my N? You know, you just said it, common knowledge, and it's just something that people said. But I think once you get to a situation where you couldn't say it to me, because if you said it to me, no matter how you said it,
it's wrong.
It's off limits. You can't do it. So if it's off limits for you, then it should be off limits for me too.
Right.
And so I think once you establish that, it's something that you got to try and change.
I know that those players probably ask you about playing with Peyton Manning as much as any player you ever played with. But if there was one player you wanted to tell them about playing with besides Peyton Manning, Is there one? Who would you tell these guys, you want to be a professional like this guy? You want to play the game like this guy? Is there anybody that stands out? Because you played with so many great ones.
Yeah, I played with a lot of great ones. I mean, a lot of great ones. Two guys come to mind right away, Peyton being one of them.
Oh, for sure.
Because he is just unbelievable, his work ethic, his study time, his attention to detail. But I think another guy is Reggie Wayne. Reggie Wayne, to me, is the epitome of a professional on and off the field. A lot of guys get caught up in his gaudy numbers on the field and things he's achieved. But Reggie, the person, if you ever got to know him and get to know him, he's an unbelievable guy. He's a lot like myself, that cares a lot about people and not so much about fanfare, who gets the glory. He just wants to, you know, go out and do his best week in, week out, and do what's best for the team and be one of those examples that guys can look to and say, hey, if Reggie can do it, I can too.
Was it strange at first to come to Jacksonville, having been in Indianapolis all those years? I wonder whether some, you know, coming inside the division there, you know, getting settled in Jacksonville. I see you now. You seem as comfortable as possible. You're a Jaguar.
Yeah, I am a Jaguar. And, you know, it was really interesting to go back to Indy this year, because I still know so many people in the organization, still know a lot of the fans, a lot of people that work security. Hey, Marcus, what are you doing working for Jacksonville? So, you know, they gave me a little bit of grief, but I think I'm really excited about where I am. And I think people in the community here and in Indianapolis understand that it's just a job. And I really feel comfortable here. Gus and Dave and you guys and the equipment guys and the training staff and, you know,
and the city.
Yeah, my family's really enjoying the city. We moved down to St. John's and we're going to the beach and they're playing basketball and they're really involved in school activities. And so it's just fitting right in for us. And we're only 5 hours from where I grew up. And so my parents can still come and see the grandkids and we can still get up to see them as well.
You know, when I look at this thing and I see what Shad is doing here, front office, football side, you know, the boards, the excitement level, it's amazing where this franchise has come from 0-8 last season, where there was a lot of finger pointing, not inside, but outside, saying, I don't know about that, to now all of a sudden people are saying, watch this. I think the message for a lot of people is, man, things can turn fast if you do the right things.
Absolutely.
Does this locker room understand that?
I think so. I think it's something that Gus, again, does a great job of reminding guys, this is what you should have to do. It's not about wins and losses. It's just you don't have to be the best, but be at your best. And if you can be at your best, we're going to trust that the results will come.
God, I know you're focused on here and now. But what do you want to stay in football? What do you want to do? Do you want to be a general manager? Do
you want to
be a
coach? Know.
I mean, the game is in your blood.
Yeah, it is.
What is Marcus Pollard's end goal in the game?
That is a great, great, great question. And my wife and I talk about it a lot. You know, I don't know. You know, I'm really excited about doing what I'm doing right now. But, you know, eventually the older I get from the locker room, I don't have that same connection with the younger crowd. And so I don't know. I really enjoy coaching. I was coaching high school football before I came to work here. And, you know, being around Dave and see what, you know, what a magnificent job he's done at GM. I'm meeting a lot of the scouts. And so, you know, I just don't know. Now I'm talking to some of the guys that's on the coaching staff that's worked in college. You know, what about being an OC in college? What about being a position coach in college? And so all these other doors are opening. But then again, Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Just, you know, there's so many opportunities and so many directions that my life can go at this point, and it's just going to let God lead it.
All right. Hey, you know what? I'm going to leave it on those words because he leads it.
Absolutely.
If you let him lead it, you end up in the right way. That's my
Absolutely.
Own personal belief as well. So I appreciate you taking the time to come in. Hopefully we'll get you back. I know you've got some off-the-field stuff, some programs with high schools that you're very involved in. When does that really kick
yeah,
in?
Yeah, it's been kicking in. Gus is adamant about doing this coaching clinic. He's very fired up about a coaching clinic we're doing tomorrow. We're inviting all the high school coaching staffs from around the Jacksonville area, five counties. We even went down to Sarasota, north to Camden County. And we're probably going to have somewhere between 250 coaches and Gus. The entire staff is going to speak tomorrow. We got gifts for them. And so that's one of the things that I'm doing. I'm doing a 7-on-7 passing camp. We'll have perimeter guys as well as the big guys. And that's June the 23rd. And that there'll be trophies and competition. That's something that Gus talks about a lot. And it's something that I'm passionate about because I was coaching high school football. It's something that we did all the time. And it's just an opportunity for the Jags to get in position to say, hey, this is how we do it. This is what you guys can do as well.
You're a great communicator. Hope you come back.
Thank you. I love to be on. Anytime you say, I'm here.
A few great minutes with Marcus Pollard. Make a change of his podcast name. Thank you very much. Time for a few good minutes now with Jaguars defensive end Andre Branch. And Andre, there's been a lot of talk in the last week about your performance through OTAs. You and I have talked about this since the middle of last season. Tell me, what was the turning point? Where did you get what it took to be a pro?
I stayed on course with my preparation. I went into each and every day just to get better. And, you know, it's all about the process. Everybody looks at your progress, but it's all about the process at the end of the day. And them bringing this new coaching staff in was, I would say, probably was a turning point because they know their players and they know how to use them and make them the best they can be.
Did somebody get under your skin? Was it Todd Walsh? Was it Gus Bradley? I mean, was anybody there poking you, or did they need to prod you, or was it just a matter of you seeing it?
No, I would say they respected me and I respected them back. My rookie year, it wasn't too much respect throughout our locker room. But when these guys came in, he brought a culture in, and we all were kind of shaky on it because of the year before. But as soon as he came in and we knew he was for real, we all bought into that. And we're here now, and we love playing for him.
I was going to say, since you bring that up, that locker room in 2012 was a very different place, probably than anything you saw at Clemson.
Yeah.
It's tough to look back and see how different it can be in just 2 years.
It's crazy. That's what I tell all.
Thanks, man.
To come in, I said, this situation you have here is probably not one like this in the NFL because it is a brotherhood, and it's just like a college feel where everybody's family. At the end of the day, it's still a business. We know that. But at the same time, you love playing for the person beside you and for the coaches that are helping you out.
So when you go out on the practice field and you follow that mantra of get better, just get better, get better, what's on your list? I mean, what are the one or two things that you're really focusing on? Where can you get better quickest?
So we watch film every day, of course. So if my pass rush is pretty good, I'm going to keep stay on the course with that. If Coach Washer said, work on your feet today, I'm going to focus on that. And then I just keep going, and by the time season comes, it's just second nature.
You know, if you're going to draw a defensive end in this game, I think you'd be it. The height, the weight, the long arms, the big hands, the whole nine yards.
Definitely.
So as a young guy coming into this league, what's the part where you have to get over your athleticism? I mean, is it the film room? Is it your handwork? What is it that takes a very talented athlete at the college level who can win with his athleticism and translates that to the NFL?
Of course, everybody's athletic, regardless if you're a center, a guard, a nose guard. It doesn't matter. Everybody's athletic in this league. When it comes down to it, it's all about your mental toughness and how you prepare for everything, because everybody's going to be physically blessed in this league. But once you can get a guy that's less athletic than you, but if he's mentally honed into his job, then he'll probably win. Because me and Mercedes were talking about this, I think, 2 days ago, and he was like, my turning point was probably my third year, and he was like, I start understanding the game. Once you understand the game, of course, the game speed is going to be different. That's one thing you have to hurry up and catch up to, because you'll get passed by. But mentally knowing, like, okay, where is this guy going to put his hands? Where is he going to step? Where is the play going? Just pre-snap reads and everything. Once you become a better student of the game, you will just start playing that much faster.
Are you motivated by the money?
At the end of the day, everybody wants to bless their family and change their family, but it started with the love of the game. I always wanted to play in the NFL, but when I was younger, I had no clue about how much money they were making and everything. Money is, of course, you want to get rewarded.
Well, you have to see the big contracts that are there if you reach your potential.
But
right?
If you focus on the money, you won't focus on your play. And so you have to focus on what you do on the field, or you will not get that big contract that you want.
If you were going to tell a young guy, young defensive end from Clemson coming into the league today, what would you tell them you learned and that they should avoid early in their career?
I would tell them never let somebody take their confidence and never become complacent. You become complacent, it's always a draft each and every year, no matter what. We know it's going to be an NFL draft each and every year, and it's going to be a younger player. You can only get older in this league. You can't get younger. You can't get those years back. So you just got to keep on focus, keep staying focused and keep pressing. And no matter what, how bad the day is, your confidence always has to stay high.
Where do you get your stuff for Twitter? I just started following you because I thought your stuff was lively.
Yeah. Yeah.
You tell me, where does it come from?
Some of it's mine. Some of it, I get stuff from anywhere. If I might hear something that you'll say one day, and I might tweet it, actually. You know.
Well, then I better get something good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no doubt. But anything. And a lot of my Twitter followers that follow me, they just write me and say, I need some windmill wisdom. I'm having this problem. I'm having that problem. And so I find something to uplift them.
Tell me real quickly about your MMA training. Is that dramatically helping you? Is it helping you fine tune? What has that done for you so far?
All of the above. I'm in LA. Me and Mercedes do MMA training with Cooper Gibson. And it's perfect for my position because it's hand speed, leverage, and knowing how to put weight on your body, like with your leverage, and knowing how to make your body go that much further. So it's perfect for being a defensive end. You learn how to bend and everything. So.
Mercedes is your boy, isn't he?
Yeah, that's like a bigger brother to me.
To have the opportunity not just to work out with him, but what about to work against him in practice, one of the bigger, better tight ends in the game?
I would say this, and I'm not just saying this because he's on my team and he's like a brother to me, but Mercedes is the best blocking tight end I've went against. And when I got here my rookie year, it was like, wow, all tight ends like this. So then I went through the year. I was like, no, he's like a left tackle that can catch. And us playing for the Jags, not too many people know that. But at the same time, he's respected throughout the league. So a lot of people maybe that are fans of the NFL don't know how good he is. But throughout the league, people know.
That us playing for the Jags thing is going away quickly, though, isn't it?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we're ready. And we're ready to get this thing turned around.
Final thought. You wear number 90.
Yep.
The best pass rusher in the history of the Jaguars
mm-hmm.
wore number 90.
Yep.
Did you know that about Tony Brackens?
When I got drafted, everybody let me know.
Okay.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
And the light came on for him late in his first year. Of course,
yep.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who was playing on a defense with a lot more veterans. So... And not that you need to live up to anything, but are you motivated to make number 90 a relevant number in Jacksonville again?
I'm here to show everybody who Andre Branch is. I respect Tony Brackens because he is the history of the Jaguars, but at the end of the day, I can't focus on what he did because that's not me. I can only be the best Andre Branch I can be.
When we turn this into a video podcast, will you do the windmill for us?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I got you.
A few good minutes with Andre Branch. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Time to wrap up this edition of A Few Good Minutes with John Osher, who will be a regular in this space at some point over the course of the season.
So in this episode, when you have a few good minutes,
right.
Bring in me for a few bad minutes.
Well, I'm hoping it's a few great minutes. I'm hoping we're going to lift the level of this
That's
thing.
That's right. Let's go for it.
You know, let's start with the obvious, and that is that OTAs are not what they once were. I mean, this is a major deal now. We've been out there every day.
I think we've talked about it in the field some, Brian. You and I started around here in 95. And when Tom Coughlin was here, it had nothing to do with Coughlin, it was how the league set up, we might have seen one or two of these, but it was really seeing mini camps and maybe some voluntary veteran mini camps, the rookie mini camp. There was nothing where you were on the field 3 or 4 days a week, 4 weeks, a month. I mean, that is a huge chunk of the offseason. It's changed. I mean, the league has more interest. It has sort of grown and sort of piling on itself, if you will. And now everything is news, everything is an access point, and it has turned into where this is not that much different than training camp, especially from the coverage point of view.
So does it make putting the ozone together every day easier or more difficult?
You know, it...
One would think it would be easier, but I can imagine some of the questions make it more difficult.
Yeah, when you do it every day, which is sort of the deal with it, that really doesn't become easier or harder. The hard times for the ozone are, frankly, coming up. Early July, very late June, it's difficult to find questions that are all football all the time. So as a result, it won't be all football all the time. And there are people I know who don't love that, but there's a couple of weeks in the off season, a couple of weeks early in the off season, where by definition, we sort of weave around a little bit, which, as you can imagine,
gets colorful.
It's colorful. It's fun. And I hope what people realize is when you're doing it 365 days a year, which we do, there's going to be some ebbs and flows. There's going to be some moments where not everybody loves the fact that there's not a tremendous amount of football. But the football questions over the course of time, there's plenty of football.
How many emails do you receive daily? How many do you read?
Well, in some capacity, I read them all.
The first sentence sometimes a tip-off, I can quit right now.
Yeah, there are some. I mean, like, if I've answered a Justin Blackmon question, you know, 3 days in a row when there's not that much more to talk about with it, then if it's a Justin Blackmon question, I'll skim and say, okay, well, this is just, I'll get to this one next week. But every email is looked at, and I'd say 90% of them are read start to finish because, as I tell people, it's not that taxing to read and answer emails. That shouldn't be something that I skim over. And the fans care enough to write. A lot of the fans, the people who read the Ozone regularly, they're into it. They get the ebb and flow. They get the joke. They're very committed to it. So it's not a bother for me to read all the emails. I am, you know, frankly flattered that so many people are that into it, where they sort of see the ebbs and flows. They know where things are going. I can make a reference to something that was done 3 or 4 weeks before, and a lot of people get it. So on that level, it's a lot of fun. And I certainly I respect and appreciate the readers too much to skim over very many of them.
I'm still new here in the dot-com world.
Sure.
Are you? Do you look at this sometimes and say, wow, we've come a long way since I arrived here from Indy?
Oh.
To see what this site is right now, and we both know where it's headed.
Sure. And yes, in the sense of the Ozone took over from Ask Vic. And it's essentially the same format, obviously. Question and answer and the fans' interaction. It's a different feel than Vic's was, but that premise was there. The premise of writing stories was there. I think what we've done is, particularly on the video side, with Patrick Cavanaugh coming on board as producer, with J.P. Shattuck emerging, with you coming on, it has become something where on the video side, it's not even fair to call it a side, the site itself has become so much richer and so much fuller and so much it's so much more of a 24/7 feel and a live event feel. It's, I think, the big progression we have made in the last year is, a year ago, if we didn't cover something live, fans didn't notice. Now, with an OTA practice, for example, which we don't cover live because there are things going on the field that are strategy-type things. It's not a live Jaguars event that we cover. But when we don't, it gets questioned. People expect it. So we have created, through going live at a lot of events throughout the season, an expectation level among the fans that they are going to know immediately what's going on around this team from Jaguars.com. Yes, we wish we could bring them everything live, but the fact that people expect it and we've raised that expectation level, I don't think we're gloating by any point to say that we're ahead of the curve around the NFL on that front, and from bringing the information to our fans in a way that's entertaining, in a way that's immediate, in a way that that they can easily comprehend and get quickly. I think we're moving quickly toward being very, very good at.
The thing I like is that I can say right now to you, next week let's talk about, you know, three questions that you got to the Ozone, or
right
in the middle of many. It can be anything you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of where we are. When you were in journalism school, when I was in journalism
right.
school, I was in the radio TV section at the University of Kansas. You were in the print section down at Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And now, look, we both kind of do the same thing. It just shows you how this
right.
whole world has evolved.
Actually, I don't want to be George O'Leary here. I was actually a business major at Florida.
Oh, you were
and
George
so
O'Leary.
I wasn't even in the print section. So, but when I started out the paper, I actually answered an email for somebody who asked me sort of, and get this, my son loved this. I got an email saying, how can I become what you are? And I said, boy, you want to go run away from that comment. But
we'd like Sherry Osher to please answer this question.
Yeah, nobody wants that. But I was trying to explain to him, it's hard for me to give advice to people who are starting off in the business today, because it is such a different business than what I started off in. I don't know how to tell somebody to train for what I do necessarily, because I just wrote to start off with for a long, long time, and have had to try to get better at talking on the radio, talking on not podcasts, or talking on TVs. There are people who would say I have a long way to go, but that has become part of the industry. That's an excessive, I mean, it's very necessary to be able to do that now. It wasn't when I started off. So as things have merged, the entire concept of what we're trying to do, because of the web and because there's video, because there's chat, because there's radio involved with it, it's become where you can't just write or can't just talk or can't just hold a camera. You have to be able to do a lot of different things, especially on a team website. I think that's a little different than maybe a newspaper website or a television station. Where we are, the reason I think that people like us is they can get it in all different forms of media. And I think it's exciting to me to see what the next two or three years are going to bring in terms of making this more real time, making this more where people know they're going to be talking with us right now. And I say with us because I think that's what distinguishes us from a lot of sites. Is I think a lot of people who come here every day feel like they're talking with us as opposed to us talking at them. If we've defined ourselves in the last couple of years, it's been that. Through Twitter, through the chats, through being live, through making people feel like they're part of the family, so to speak.
Sitting in the living room.
I think we're going more toward that. I don't want to say we're there yet, but that's the vision, and I think we're getting closer and closer each year.
A vision statement from John Osher. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Next week, we're going to talk about three big stories. Sound good?
I'm looking forward to it.
3 days, 3 days of minicamp to wrap it all up. I'm really looking forward to that.
A few bad seconds at the end of three bad minutes. How about that?
And we'll leave it at that. That's John Osher, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us on this week's edition of A Few Good Minutes.